All right, thank you for that. Karina, let's stand together this evening. We'll read our verses in Daniel chapter 5 tonight. Daniel chapter number 5. We will read the first 9 verses here. We've been in the book of Daniel for, this is I think our 7th week. We're calling the series Living Right When Everything Is Wrong. We've already looked at the first 4 chapters. Tonight we're going to start in chapter number 5. We're going to meet a new leader here, Belshazzar. Daniel chapter 5. We'll start in verse number 1. It says, "And Belshazzar the king made a feast to 1,000 of his lords and drank wine before the 1,000. Belshazzar, whilst he tasted the wine, commanded to bring the golden and silver vessels which his father Nebuchadnezzar had taken out of the temple, which was in Jerusalem." These were the consecrated pieces. "That the king and his princes, his wives, and his concubines might drink therein. Then they brought the golden vessels that were taken out of the temple of the house of God, which was at Jerusalem. The king and his princes, his wives, his concubines drank in them. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and of silver, of brass, of iron, of wood, and of stone. In the same hour came forth fingers of a man's hand and wrote over against the candlestick upon the plaster of the wall of the king's palace, and the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. Then the king's countenance was changed, and his thoughts troubled him, so that the joints of his loins were loosed, and his knees smote one against another. The king cried aloud to bring in the astrologers, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers. And the king spake and said to the wise men of Babylon, whosoever shall read this writing and show me the interpretation thereof shall be clothed with scarlet and have a chain of gold about his neck and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom. Then came in all the king's wise men, but they could not read the writing, nor make known to the king the interpretation thereof. Then was King Nebuchadnezzar greatly troubled, and his countenance was changed in him, and his lords were astonished." Let's pray. Father, thank you again for this evening. Thank you for this brief time we have together as we look at your word. I pray, Lord, that you'd help us learn something that would help us in our lives today, in Jesus' name, amen. You may be seated. Of course, as we've mentioned on many occasions over the last few weeks, these chapters, these verses, what's going on here really applies to us today. They lived in a very wicked and a very godless society. And by the way, whenever you have wickedness and you have godlessness, things get goofier and goofier and just bizarre, the things that are going on. Every day you hear something different. I heard just the other day that I'm not a Barbie doll fan. Anyhow, I never did really play with them. Brother Ross did. He was into those for a while. But Barbies now in their commercial are targeting boys. Not G.I. Joe dolls. They have a new commercial with a boy in it, excited about, there was some new Barbie doll that came out, and he was fired up about it. By the way, that is not accidental. Okay, they're driving the bus of our society a certain direction. This doesn't sound right, but I wouldn't let my boy play with a Barbie doll. Okay, boys should eat dirt, chase snakes, throw rocks at things, and stuff like that. Let your boys be boys, and let the girls be girls. We were out here before church, and Shiloh. Shiloh, we're out here this morning, and Shiloh's just, he's jumping around in the dirt for no reason. My brother Raul told me to get out of the dirt because he didn't want to stomp the plants, but I'm like, I'm glad, I'd rather have him stomp in the dirt than play with a Barbie doll. Steven used to play with Barbie dolls, and look what happened to him. Now, sorry about that, son. I didn't mean to tell people. But we have politicians, as I mentioned the other day, that think that the greatest problem in our society is global warming. Really? There's all kinds of stuff going on. But not to be real negative, with Christ, all is still very good. Okay? Why the things around us and people are falling for things that aren't right, we still can have the life that God wants us to have. And we can still do right in the society in which we live. We don't have to give in. Well, you know, that's just how it is, and that's how things are. We might as well get on board with it. We don't really have to, even when everything is going bad. And we've seen that in the first four chapters in Daniel and his three friends. Now, his three friends are gone. They're off the scene. And now it's just Daniel that's going to be dealt with in this book. And Daniel is still doing the right thing. And so that's what we want to look at tonight. Everybody has heard the phrase, the handwriting on the wall. But few in our society really understand where that phrase comes from. It comes from the story right here in the book of Daniel chapter 5. Here's what's going on here. Last week, we said goodbye to King Nebuchadnezzar. He had been the leader of Babylon, and he was the guy in the first four chapters. Now he is gone, and he is off the scene, and we're dealing with somebody else. He reigned until about 562 B.C., after he died, there was a succession of rulers that took his place over a small span. He had a son that reigned for 2 years. He was then murdered by his brother-in-law, and his brother-in-law then reigned for 4 years. He was taken off the scene, and there was a puppet ruler put in place that was a very weak leader. He reigned for just several months. And then history tells us that a man named Nabonidus ruled the empire. Now, Nabonidus ruled the empire at the time that we get to Daniel chapter 5, but he was a conqueror type of guy, and so he had campaigns of war. So what he did is he took his son, Belshazzar, and he kind of made him like a co-ruler, and specifically, he was a ruler over Babylon, and that's why we're dealing with him today. By the way, for many years, people always are looking for things to nitpick at the Bible. For many years, they tried to use that as, well, you know, the Bible talks about Belshazzar, but there was no Belshazzar that was a leader. It was a guy named Nabonidus. Well, archaeology eventually caught up and found some things that showed that this is exactly what happened. By the way, the Bible is very accurate. If later on when we get to where he offers Daniel to be third ruler in the kingdom, if he would interpret the handwriting on the wall, that's because he couldn't give him second place. His father and he were the first two, so Daniel could only be the third in line there. And so this man is ruling, and his son, Belshazzar, is now ruling it. Babylon was a very well-fortified city. History tells us, and excavation tells us, they had a very complicated series of walls that guarded their city, which were very hard to penetrate. Some of them were 300, I think one of them was 300 feet high in several of them, and it gave them a sense of security. They boasted that they were impregnable. In other words, the enemy could not break through the walls, and that they had enough food and supplies to take care of themselves for 20 years in case a country came to siege them and then and keep the food from coming in. So they felt like they were very, very secure. At the time this story is taking place, the Medes and the Persian Empire is right outside the wall of the city. They're already after the city, but yet Belshazzar feels very comfortable that nothing is going to happen. So what is he doing? He's having a party. And not just any party, but he is having a serious party, a godless party. And as he does, God sends a hand with fingers to write on a very conspicuous wall, right where the candlestick, where the light would be right on it, right on the wall, and it disturbs him. That's where we get that phrase, the handwriting on the wall. In an instant, everything changes. They go from this godless revelry and this party that they have, and Nebuchadnezzar's whole countenance and everything about him changes. The party comes to an abrupt end. The leaders, they're sober up, as it were. But especially Belshazzar. This really bothers him. This is very unusual. Maybe he's thinking back to the dreams that his grandfather Nebuchadnezzar had and how God dealt with him. And he's thinking about all of this. But if you know the story, you know what happens. Daniel, and we'll look a little bit more at it next week, but Daniel comes in and he gives him the handwriting on the wall. And the bottom line is Belshazzar's kingdom's going to end that night. But I want us to look first at part of the reason that God finally put an end to their kingdom. There is this godless party that is a symbol of this godless king who rejected God. By the way, a God that Nebuchadnezzar, I believe, had come to know, if you look at chapter 4, as we did last week. His party is coming to an end. So tonight, I want us to just take a brief look at this, because I'll be honest with you, some of the things that are symbolized in this party are really prevalent in our society today. It's a very godless society in which we live. And we need to be careful for several things. Number one, that we are right and we do what we're supposed to do, and that we don't have a fatalistic view of what is going on. First of all, I want you to notice two things. I want you to look at Belshazzar's party. There's several things in this party that are not good. First of all, I want you to notice the signal that he gave in his party. Look at verse number one. He said, I, Belshazzar, the king, made a great feast to the thousand of his lords, all of his leaders, and drank wine before the thousand. Now, before means he was front and center. He was very conspicuous in what he was doing. In other words, there's a lot of nonsense we're going to look at that's going on here, but he's before the people. In other words, he's in a prominent place where they can see everything he's doing, and he's almost leading the charge, as it were, which, by the way, is kind of unusual for a king in that type of setting. There's many things about this that are unusual. But what he's doing, his actions were setting the signal for everything else that everybody else was involved with. He is leading the party. He sets an example, and it's not a good one. By the way, it's very sad when those in leadership set an example that is not very good. It's very sad when those in authority drag people down instead of lifting them up. We need to be very careful about that. We live in a time when people have no backbone anymore. We have civil leaders, and leaders, instead of looking, saying, this is the way we are supposed to go, they stick their finger in there, and they're checking the wind and say, well, where does everyone else want to go? Who's chirping the loudest? That's not the way it ever has supposed to have been. What is right is up for grab. We kind of look to the trends of society and say, which way is society going? Well, maybe that's the way we should go. Do you know the majority is not always right? They don't always know the facts. There has to be some standard of moral righteousness which is to be followed and which is to be the guiding force, not just in our life, but really in our society, but specifically in our own lives as Christians. We're not supposed to just check to see which direction things are going and say, well, I guess that's just the way I'm supposed to go. After all, I don't want to rock the waves. I don't want to go against the stream. What we've learned about Daniel and his friends, they had no problem going against the stream. But his signal gave the picture that what was going on was acceptable. It is right and it is fine. All of us need to be very careful, because in some way we are an authority or a leader, and our actions can send signals to those we're supposed to influence correctly, and we can give them a very negative influence. Think about families. Children and spouses, and the parents are supposed to lead the children, but our society just kind of thinks today that parents aren't supposed to tell children what to do. By the way, no five-year-old is capable of taking care of themselves. I don't know where we've got this thing. I was making visits a couple weeks ago, and I think I mentioned one of the service, and I stopped at Starbucks to get a coffee. Because anybody that really is a Christian, they're going to drink coffee, of course. But I'm getting a coffee, and then there was this lady in front of me, and she had a couple of her kids. They went to a soccer match. Dad was there. And one of the kids like, hey, I want a snack. And mom said, no, you can't have one. I'm like, good. I mean, mom stood up. She didn't even flinch. But as soon as we got out and she's waiting for a coffee, the kid's over there kicking her in the leg. I'm mad at you. And Dad didn't do a thing. Mom didn't do a thing. It's like they were ignoring the kid. Like, that wouldn't happen in our house. But we've been told that, listen, you can't tell what to do. That's our job. We're supposed to set some kind of an example. But how often do we set the wrong, we tell our kids, well, do as I say, don't do as I do. do. That doesn't work, by the way, all right? All of it. We influence in our church family and in our regular families, and you need to be very, very careful about it. We can ruin each other. Spouses often ruin each other. I used to listen to a show years ago. It's still on, I think. It's called Unshackled. How many ever heard of Unshackled? It's a newer type radio show. It's kind of patterned after the old classic type radio shows, and it's a Christian one. And what they do is they do a drama of someone's life and how they receive Christ. I remember I was listening to one, and this guy was talking about how he's an alcoholic and just really, you know, just horrible in his family. And he had a wife that was trying to help him, and she was really hanging in there and pushing him to do the right thing for all these years. And he ignored her pleas for him to get help. And about the time he became a Christian, she started following his bad example. And what happened is after he became a Christian, her life had changed, and she started living the life that he was living before he was a Christian. Now, eventually she came around, but it's like, I'm the one that led her down that path. You see, none of us live our lives unto ourselves. Everything we do has some type of influence somewhere. And so we ought to take that very seriously. Now, not to just be negative, but the positive can also be true. We can set a good example for the right course. But Belshazzar here, he's setting the wrong example. And so he sent a wrong signal. I also want you to notice his party. It was very selfish. Again, in verse 1, he made the party about himself. Now, there's a couple reasons why he may have done that. Being a co-leader and being the son of the guy who was really the number one guy, he may have wanted to show that he was the big guy and he was the boss and he had power too, and you know, respect him and I can do what I want, that type of thing. But he was very, very selfish. It may have been because of an insecurity. But the whole thing was based on his selfishness. And because of that, we're going to see in a few minutes that it's really going to go to a ridiculous extreme. By the way, one of the greatest gods of our age is ourselves. Now, we never bow down and worship ourselves, but many of us, and we all at one time are struggle with this, I guess, but we think that our life revolves around us. Life is more than you. A person that worships, or that lives their lives, in a sense, worshiping themselves, you have a very puny God. Life isn't just about us. The greatest thing we can do is learn, as the Bible tells us, to esteem others better than ourselves. Quit living just for ourselves. But we live in that time. I like these verses in Philippians. It talks about it. Philippians chapter 3, verse 18 and 19. Let me read it to you. It says, "But many walk, of whom I have told you often, and now tell you, even weeping, that they are the enemies of the cross of the Christ, whose end is destruction." Now listen, this is a very interesting phrase. Whose God is their belly, whose glory is their shame, who mind earthly things, whose God is their belly. In other words, their whole life is about their own desires, in a sense. What I want. That's selfishness. And Belshazzar was one of the more selfish ones. The feast that he gave is a perfect example of 1 John 2:16. "For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of the life is not of the Father, but is of the world." What are those things? And we've mentioned them often. The lust of the flesh is the desire to do. It's when our desires got up. It's what our flesh just naturally wants to do. By the way, what our flesh naturally wants to do usually is wrong. Someone has said, and I don't know if it's necessarily in the Bible, but it is good advice, and it, a lot of times it's right, that if we want to know what the right thing to do is, don't do that first thing that comes to our mind. You went shopping and someone cut in front of you in line. What was your first thought? They're probably in a hurry. Maybe I should just let them go. Okay? Someone cut you off on the freeway. What do you think? That's a really nice car. They're probably heading to the hospital. Their wife's having a baby. No, most of us think, let me hustle through traffic and catch up with them, and I'll cut them off, right? You know, our flesh just naturally wants to do the wrong thing. That's the lust of the flesh, the desire to do. The lust of the eyes, that's the desire to have. Everything we see, we've got to have. And everything's about accumulation. Really, we call that the Solomon syndrome. Same, King Solomon had everything he ever wanted, but you know what? He wanted everything. And he said, whatever my eyes saw, I didn't keep back. I went and got it. And then the pride of life. What is that? The desire to be? I want to be a big shot. I want to be the big guy. We make life all about ourselves, and that's what Belshazzar was doing. I want you to notice his party was also very, very sinful. Look at what they were doing. Verse 2. Belshazzar's, why he tasted the wine, they're out drinking, commanded to bring the golden and silver vessels which his father Nebuchadnezzar had taken out of the temple, which is at Jerusalem. That's a big no-no. That the king and his princes and his wives and his concubines might drink therein. Man, there's just a lot of nonsense going on. They're all drinking and they're getting drunk, and now they're going to take it. We'll mention this, what these represent, in a minute, but now they're going to take it to a more extreme. I mean, it was just all about whatever we want to do, whatever we want, whether it's right or wrong in the first place. Sin. Sin is like that. Sin can never be checked. Once we start giving in to whatever sin it is, it always starts to spin out of control. It always keeps going, and it more and more and more. And by the way, it's never fulfilling. It's never fulfilling. It's not like when you were eating on Thanksgiving. If you went to one or two places by the end of the night, you didn't feel very good, right? How many of you had that, like, fulfilling? Okay, so it's like the first meal at my sister's house was okay. The second meal at our house, it was okay. It was good too, but I mean, you're full. Sin's not like that. Sin's like, I get this, I'll be satisfied. I need more. And you're never satisfied because that's not what it does. We always want more. It's like the old adage. Sin will take you farther than you want to go, keep you longer than you want to stay, and cost you more than you want to pay. It's not worth it. It is just not worth it. It literally spirals out of control. Think of the Bible. David with Bathsheba. You know what David with Bathsheba thought about with that? It was just, he put himself in a bad place. He saw her. It was just a one-night thing. What's the big deal? It ended up being a lot more than that. Then it became a cover-up campaign. Then it became something where it was so out of control, he had to have Uriah murdered. And then the destruction it caused in his family. You know, David didn't see that when that first night when he was out on the roof watching her take a bath, which he shouldn't have been doing in the first place. It kind of spiraled out of control from there. Well, this is just one. What's the big deal? It is a big deal. It's like Samson. Samson and his little flings with all these different ladies, and he gets Delilah. No big deal. I'm just dating Delilah. I'm flirting around with her when it comes to where the source of his strength is, and then it's too late. Now he's caught. Now they're gouging his eyes out. They're mocking him. It's like Joseph's brothers. It all started with just a little bit of jealousy. And it spiraled out of control to where they were actually literally going to kill him. And then they send him back to excuse me. Then they bring a story to his dad that a beast ate him. You can't control it. Excuse me. Letter D, I want you, or next. I also want you to see his party. It's sensual. Something very interesting that's tucked in these verses here. So they go and they bring these vessels, but I want you to notice who was at these parties. There were ladies present. That was not the norm for a king in that culture in that time. Think back to Esther. When King Artaxerxes was having a party, the ladies were nowhere to be found. That was not normal to bring them into something like that. But this party, because this party was going on, they had ladies present with them. Very, very sensual. That's the connotation that's here. Our whole society is based on that. Everything in our society now is based on immorality, and that which is sensual. Look at the Bible times. Some of the worship back in the Bible involved immorality. Were you ever reading the Bible about Baal or Baal? that was a statue, and part of the worship, what they would do, they would heat the arms of this statue to it was red hot. They would put a baby on there. While the baby was being sacrificed, it was nothing more, and I don't want to use the word, there's kids around here, it was nothing more than just an immorality taking place. As the baby is being offered as a sacrifice to a false god. You think of in the book in Ephesians, when you read there, the temple of the goddess Diana. The temple of the goddess Diana, which was one of the seven ancient wonders of the world, was basically, there was a bunch of priestesses there, and it was nothing more than a house of ill repute, let's put it. They were nothing more than prostitutes. And their worship involved the men going to be with the priest at the temple. They made that into their religion. Now, in our society, we are way more sophisticated than that, Brother Machado. Immorality has just become woven into the fabric of our life. It's been woven into the fabric of our society. And if anybody says anything about it, we're looked at as if there's something wrong with it. Our society is literally saturated in sensuality. It's everywhere. By the way, it starts in a very early age. We teach our children in our public school system about it at a very early age. It's funny, several years ago, the Long Beach Press-Telegram had a story about our school system saying that the goal of our school, or the Long Beach Unified School District, their goal was for the children to learn to read by third and fourth grade. By the way, our children learn to read in five-year-old kindergarten. They're not just dumb little children. They can learn. But yet, before that age, they'll already start teaching them about the facts of life. Can I just tell you something? They don't need to learn that. Not mature enough. Then they wonder why they act out. I remember when we were in fifth grade, they made us watch that. I went to Bret Hart Elementary School. Now I was not a Christian. My family wasn't Christian. I remember my mom had to sign a paper. We're going to watch the facts of life. And so I remember we went into the auditorium. They showed us this, and it was pictures, you know. And they showed us. They were very graphic, and they gave us all the terms. Well, we were immature boys, you know. So you know what we did? We went around using those terms in our conversations. We were calling each other names. We were using the words, and I'll never forget, our teacher heard us, and she sat there, and she pulled the three or four of us that were doing that, and she chewed us out, and I'm thinking, you taught us this. Now, yeah, we probably weren't using it in a correct way, but it's like, we wouldn't even have known this had you not shown us all of that. Well, you know, how are children going to know? They'll figure it out. It's just an excuse to just corrupt. We wonder why there's so many off-the-wall types of things going on because children are just inundated with so much garbage. Can't even watch a children's show without them throwing some kind of innuendo. By the way, since you asked, I'll go ahead and throw this out. I would not let my children watch The Muppet Show. You know, it's not The Muppets anymore where the Cookie Monster's after Elmo or whoever the one with the big eyes is, or whoever that is. That show has all kinds of garbage on it. Why? It's our whole society is permeated with this garbage. We need to be very, very careful. It's used to sell cars. You name it. It's ruining good families. By the way, let me say this. Be on guard. All the different ways we have to communicate with each other, it's so easy now for all this flirtatious little talk to start. Don't you dare let that happen. You ladies, if you're out at work and one of your co-workers in a text or an email or something says some little flirtatious things, you ought to tell your husband. You ought to go right down there and say, excuse me, you ain't talking to my wife like that. But see, you don't say anything and you go kind of banter back and forth. Everything always starts out innocently. We need to be very, very careful what we're doing here. It's ruining families. It's ruining us, ruining our society. You know, you get on your little thing and your old friend's clicking, your old girlfriend, your old boyfriend. I think I mentioned it. It's never as good as it was back in the day. If it was so good back in the day, why didn't you get hooked up? It wasn't that good. You're trying to recapture your youth. Why don't you be thankful for the one that God gave you? Well, my wife's not perfect. My husband's not perfect. Well, neither are you. Be very, very careful. And because we've become so We've become so used to it, now we have to change even the definition of what it is. Now it can be a man with a man. It can be a woman with a man. It could be two women and one man, or one man and two women. Now they want these things where it's three women or three guys together. You name it. It's getting ridiculous. Now we don't even know what gender we are anymore. We're confused about. I'll tell you why. Because our society is so in it. We don't want to just stand up and say, listen, I feel sorry for someone that struggles with that. But it doesn't help them to say it's okay. Why don't we help? But that's our society. We don't even know what bathroom we should use anymore. I do. I hope I get there. I'm a triangle, right? Is a triangle in a circle? I do know one time many years ago I went into the wrong bathroom. I didn't realize that until I came out. I'm like, hey, how come the men are going in that one? Oh, my bad. I'm a triangle. I'm glad to be a triangle. I don't want to be a circle. Okay, if you're a circle, be a circle. There's no rectangles. There's no octagons or whatever you want to name it. But that's all a result of our confusion with the sensuality thing. We got to be very careful. We also want you to notice this party was very sacrilegious. Very sacrilegious. Look at verse 4. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and of silver, of brass and iron and wood, of stone. What they did is he went, when Nebuchadnezzar originally invaded the land, he went to the temple and he took the utensils that the Israelites made of silver and gold that were for worship in the temple, and he took them back to Babylon. And Belshazzar's saying, bring those in. We're going to use those for our party. And they went a step further. They used it to praise their gods. That's sacrilegious. That's literally spitting in God's eye. We're going to find out that that did not turn out very well for him. In our society, God is on the downswing. No one wants to hear about him anymore. We say all kinds of things about him. We have no respect for God anymore. We blame God. I mentioned a couple weeks ago, Dawkins, the great atheist, the atheist said that America is the most, now he doesn't understand what he's saying, God bless him. He said America is the most advanced society in the world. And then he says, but we're being held back technologically because we believe in God. I don't get that. How can we, if we're the most advanced and we believe in God, maybe it's the other way around. He had the right statement, but he had the wrong application. All kinds of things. Oh, you Christians are being, you know, God's holding out on you. God's not popular anymore. But what really bothers me when people take Jesus and try to bring him down to our level. We want to make Jesus a party animal. Jesus isn't a party animal. He's Lord. Don't try to mold him into man's image. I mentioned before, many years ago over here in Carson, in some church I was driving down, I don't think it was a church, they had a big poster of Jesus up there. He was dressed like, and he was dressed like a gangbanger with a big neck, and he's like, what's up? That's not Jesus. He's the Lord. Let's not bring him down to our level. But it was sacrilegious. And then I want you to see the security that he had in his party. He thought, even though the Medes and the Persians were right outside the wall, he was so self-centered and so confident, he thought, we're secure. Nothing could happen. Well, whenever your security is not in God, something bad can always happen. True security only comes from the Lord. Now, in the last couple minutes, I want you to see Belshazzar's pain. What happens to him? Well, the hand comes finally as they're having this party. God has a way of knowing how to just stop the whole thing, right? Here comes his hand. It writes on the wall. I want you to notice a couple of things. Look at verse 6. He changes immediately. Verse 6. Then the king's countenance was changed. No more partying. The smile is off his face now. That cockiness is had. That sacrilegious attitude. That sinful attitude. It's gone now. And his thoughts troubled him. So that the joints of his loins were loose. He was literally shaking. And his knees smote one against another. Hey, what happened? Well, where's the party now? The truth is coming out. He's starting to be dealt with, and it's not a good thing. It affected him. It affected him emotionally. You could see it on his face. It affected him physically. You could see it in the way he was moving, and it affected him mentally. By the way, living a certain lifestyle has consequences in all of those areas. We want to live that godless lifestyle. Let me tell you something. It affects us adversely, emotionally, physically, and socially. It's not good for us. The best kind of life you can live is the Christian life. It's better for you in every single way. Seems like the party life wasn't working. I want you to notice this council. These guys kill me here. Verse 7. We've seen this before, haven't we? Then the king cried aloud to bring in the astrologers, the Chaldeans, the soothsayers. The king spake and said to the wise men of Babylon. They didn't have the answer in chapter 2. They didn't have the answer in 3. They didn't have the answer in any of the chapters. These guys are batting zero. And yet he brings them back in. He should have known from history. He knew the history of the kingdom. He knew the history of Nebuchadnezzar and how it all worked out. These guys could never help. And yet the first thing he does is bring them back up. Here they come parading back in. And by the way, and he does the same thing. He's going to offer them a reward. Whosoever shall read the writing and show the interpretation thereof shall be clothed with scarlet and shall have a chain of gold around his neck and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom. Man, he says, listen, you'll win the super prize if you can tell me what this is all about. Then he came in, all the king's wise men, but they could not read the writing nor make known to the king the interpretation. No answers. No answers. It's amazing how we keep running to the wrong people to get the right answers. Spiritual situations can only be helped with spiritual advice. Why don't we run to the Bible when we're having issues? Why don't we run to the wisdom of God's word? Why do we run to this friend and that friend and listen to the newest talk show? Listen, if our society is going to be helped, it's not going to be Dr. Phil. It's not going to be Oprah. It's not going to be conservative talk show host. They can diagnose the problem, but they cannot give you the correct answers. Those answers only come from God's word. And we keep running back, and we keep running back, and we keep running back. Now I want you to see his concern. Look at verse 9. Then was King Belshazzar greatly troubled, and his countenance was changed in him. It's amazing to me that the whole reason for this party, he was kind of leading this whole thing, and all of his leaders are there, and I'm the big guy, I'm in charge, and he's trying to impress them. Now in their presence, he's breaking down right in front of them. Right in front of them. The point is, that kind of lifestyle doesn't work. What kind of lifestyle? The lifestyle our society is pouring out doesn't work. If we are getting better and better, then answer me this question. Why are things worse and worse? Worse and worse. If I did not know the Lord, living in this society would bother me. But you know what? I know the Lord. And I know that things are better with him. We can be like Daniel. We don't have to follow all the nonsense. By the way, we need to be very careful. Some of these things we mentioned that we make sure that this does not infiltrate our lives. We don't fall for this stuff. But we're like Daniel. And it amazes me that every time there was something going on, everything was done, and almost like the last-ditch effort, let's bring in Daniel. And it's like every time he comes in, it's like, here's the answer. We always save what's right to the end. By the way, the Bible has the answers. And what our world needs, it doesn't need a bunch of hypocritical, mean-spirited. You know what it needs? It needs someone that they can look to and say, there's something different going on there. I don't know what it is. Something different. And you know what that difference is? It's the Lord. I know they're going to go to all their little things. They're going to do all their little stuff. But eventually they'll come back to the right place. It'd be nice if we had the answer for them and for ourselves. Let's stand to this evening.